What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Turn the Jets Live. I'm your host, Steven Zantz, joined by my co-host, Steven Russo. We are joined by a very special guest, Tyler Brennewald of the Jets Wire and part of USA Today's coverage of the Jets. What's up, Tyler? How are you doing tonight?
Hey, everyone. I'm doing fantastic. Hope you guys are doing well, too.
What about you, Steven?
Doing great. I think we're going to dive right in here with the Zach Wilson news. So, I don't think we really need to announce anything. They're struggling to get him signed. The only player not to report to camp. I know, Steven, you're pretty fired up about this, man. So we'll kick it off with you first. So go ahead.
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts about this. It's pretty much been bothering me this entire day, reading about everything and just seeing everything. But the bottom line is this. Every other first rounder, really every other rookie is signed. Why are the Jets playing such hardball? And everything I'm reading, it's not Joe Douglas. It's not, like anybody in the front office. It is coming from the top. It is the Johnsons. It is Woody, because they don't want to set a precedent about with this offset language stuff. And basically, if they do this for Zach, other players are going to do it, and they don't want to do this. At the end of the day, you need to have a middle ground. This guy is the franchise quarterback. Whether you like it or not, we have nobody else on this roster. I don't want to hear about Mike White. I don't want to hear about James Morgan or whoever they even maybe acquired to be the backup quarterback for the actual regular season. It's just absolute lunacy what's going on. I'm just so frustrated that they haven't done this. He needs all the practice time he can get. Every day that he misses, it's probably not going to be a big deal if it's like, 2-3 days, but who knows? What we actually uncovered today is that he's actually represented by Joey Bosa's agent. And if you go back to his rookie season, he literally missed all of training camp and signed a week before camp. You can't do that with a rookie quarterback. It's a lot easier to rush the passer without reps than playing quarterback. So I'm really frustrated. They need to figure this out. I tried my best not to curse here. The floor is yours, Tyler.
Yeah, I mean, you hit on all the main points. I think the biggest issue with not getting Wilson in the door as quickly as possible is that it trickles down from the quarterback position. Every single player on that offense is going to play worse if you don't have the guy who's going to start week one there immediately. So as well as good as Mike White and James Morgan are in the eyes of Robert Saleh as a backup QB, none of them are nearly as close to the skill level as Zach Wilson. So it doesn't make sense. It just needs to be resolved at some point. Precedent shouldn't matter because this is a new era, a new regime. You should be able to start clean and fresh. And this is not a great start for this new era.
Yeah, I think you both bring up extremely good points. What I would lean towards, first of all, we brought this up last week on our show, Steven. I still don't think it's time to panic. Mm-hmm. If this goes into the weekend, into that first, full pad of practice, like we were just talking about, then yeah, I think, then we can start hitting the panic button a little bit. I don't think it'll go as lengthy as Joey Bosa's. If he misses, 4 weeks of training camp, then it's like that just gets into ridiculous territory. But I guess what I would say is from my point of view, which is the fans' point of view, it's just frustrating. It's annoying. It's infuriating. Like this, the Jets have literally done no wrong in this entire offseason. We're coming off of 2 years of Adam Gase. Nobody could be more excited about Joe Douglas, Robert Saleh, Zach Wilson, and what they've built in this offseason and the trajectory of this team. And you guys not getting this done right now just puts a sour taste in your mouth, and it takes the wind right out of their sails coming into camp. I mean, we could not be more excited about this training camp, this team, and the foundation that they're building. And to continue to for Woody Johnson to have to draw this line in the sand, like, I get setting a precedent, but at this point, find a middle ground. To your point, Steven, find it, get the deal done, get him in camp. Let's be excited like we all were for the last, 3 months post-draft.
Yeah, like it's literally to the point where it's like all the positive momentum and all the good vibes you're hearing about in the building, it's like it's all vanished because of what's going on. And it just brings back that narrative that, the Browns have had as well. And, they finally have gotten rid of it. But it's like the LOL Jets. It's like, yeah. Why are bad teams staying bad when you do things like this? I kind of just quoted Mike Florio because I was reading him saying that. But he does have a point, even though I know he's being a little bit negative because he likes to rip on the Jets because they're an easy target. But at the end of the day, you need to get things done, and good teams would not allow this to happen. And the thing that makes it more frustrating is everyone was pointing to how Trey Lance was unsigned. But guess what? They got it done the first day that they really needed to, and he's practicing. And the difference is with that situation is Jimmy Garoppolo is probably going to be the quarterback week one. So even if he was unsigned and not practicing, it wasn't going to affect him as much as it's going to affect Zach Wilson, because he's the quarterback. There's no question about it. Even if they get another guy in, I know they're looking at Josh Johnson and Sean Mannion, but neither of those guys are actually going to push him for the job. If they got someone like Nick Foles, he probably could push him, but he's not going to be the quarterback either. So Zach needs to be out there. He needs every rep he can get. I know that, you know, like the pads don't actually come on until Saturday. So realistically, it doesn't matter until then, but I'm going there on Saturday. And so are you, Steven. And if I'm not seeing him there, I'm going to be really pissed because the fans want to see this. You know, they keep calling me to try to get tickets every day. I'm like, I'm not going. If you guys are going to keep having this precedent of not signing the main player, the most important guy of the franchise. I mean, it's just it's insane. I just can't take it anymore. Like, just get it done. It's not that hard.
And I know it's the age old adage in sports, you know, deadlines for an action. I get it. But still, you've had 3 months to figure this out. You knew going into it that the offset language was going to be a problem. It was going to be a hang up. But you had 3 months to hammer this deal out. And it's just it really just is frustrating. And I don't blame Joe Douglas. I know this is Woody Johnson. But still, I mean, you have to find a middle ground to be able to get this done so you can get him in camp. This is more important than it's ever been with a new head coach, a new offensive coordinator, mm-hmm. an entirely new offensive system with relying on not only new players, but young players as well. So this is every rep that he misses is an important rep. Again, I'm not going to hit the panic button just yet, but I'm getting closer and closer with every day that this drags out.
Yeah, for sure.
It's also a little frustrating because this isn't the first time this has happened with the Jets. So you guys sort of alluded to this happened with Sam Darnold. He missed 3 days of practice, which again, wasn't a really big deal, but it was the exact same situation. Even Quinn Williams missed a little bit of time, I think, because of the idea of when he would be paid his signing bonus because he was in Alabama first, where there's like a shorter income tax than in New Jersey. So it's just like at some point, I mean, we're saying the same thing over and over again, which is fine, but like there's got to be a middle ground. You got to get him in.
Yeah.
And it's such a small concession to make because you shouldn't be worried about offset language. It's like the same thing that like Peyton Manning's offensive coordinator said, you don't plan to mess up. If everything goes smoothly, you'll pay him the money because he played really well.
It's like
if it doesn't go smoothly, then it didn't matter anyway.
Yeah, like you're all screwed anyway. And Joe Douglas,
what kind of message are you sending? Like literally, it's like you're saying, oh yeah, we don't know if you're necessarily going to be good. Like, no, you invested a lot of capital and resources into developing this guy. Like, you have to get this done. Okay, we could transition. So Tyler, you touched on Quinnen a little bit. So one of the big, like, you know, tidbits that I got from watching Salah's press conference today is that Quinnen's probably out until he said about August 16th. So like the green and white scrimmage. Do you guys think this is concerning? You know, what would you say is like your panic meter right now from 1 to 10, Tyler? I'm curious.
Since he hasn't ruled him out for week 1 yet, I don't think there's any reason to panic. Everyone knew when he got surgery that his timetable was like 8 to 12 weeks, which kind of lines up with what he was saying might be a little bit later, but that's fine. I think with a guy like Quinnen, I mean, he's technically a veteran, but he's played enough where I don't think practice is necessarily as important. Granted, new defensive scheme, he needs those reps, but I think his health is probably more important than him picking up the defense. Like the Jets aren't planning to win the Super Bowl this year. Would it be great if they did? Absolutely. Would it be great if they made the playoffs? Absolutely. But I think it's going to take time. It's going to take a couple of games for everyone to acquiesce anyway. So I think it's more important not to rush Quinnen back, especially if it's dealing with a foot injury, which we know can linger in athletes for years.
Yeah. What do you think, Steven? Same thing?
Yeah, I mean, on the panic meter, you know, 1 to 10, I'm probably at a 2 or a 3. I'm not going to put a lot of stock in this. I agree with Tyler. I think it's better to take him back and be cautious and be slow with it. I think he can still get mental reps in a new system. That's probably the biggest concern is just, you know, him learning a new system because he is going to be a big part of this defense and we all expect him to make a huge jump from year 2 to year 3. However, you don't want to risk that by rushing him back too quickly, especially in early training camp. So if mid-August is the date and he still gets, you know, some reps in there before the first season opener, then I'm good. But I think getting him on the field for week 1 at Carolina, that's going to be the biggest thing. So whatever cautious steps you have to take to make sure that happens, I'm in favor of.
Yeah, I mean, like you guys said, I think as long as if he's not in the green and white scrimmage and he's still not practicing by the middle of August, then my level of concern will go up. But as of now, not a big deal. And I know I was just talking to you guys off air about, you know, their biggest concern is they don't want him to put too much pressure on his healthy foot because, you know, he's going to be trying to overcompensate and worried about, you know, re-injuring the injured foot. And as someone who has like a shoulder problem, I've had those experiences where I'm trying to overcompensate with my better shoulder and it ultimately leads to, you know, some pain on that side. So I just want them to be cautious. He's basically the second or third most valuable asset on the team outside of Zach Wilson. It just depends if you choose him or Becton. So to me, in terms of injuries for both those guys, especially Becton as well, just be as cautious as possible. Becton definitely needs reps. You know, like he did miss some time last year. And I definitely like to get all the work he can in, especially now that he's in really good shape. I was reading on Twitter how, you know, he definitely looks really good and, you know, he had no issues at all. And because I know obviously he was dealing with an injury as well, but yeah, no, it's definitely pretty good. I think from a health perspective, the team looks good. But the two other updates from the injury perspective is that Ashton Davis and both Vinny Curry are actually supposed to be out until the home opener. Do you guys think that's a little concerning? I think Vinny Curry is less concerning. Ashton Davis, you know, that's a little bit of an eyebrow raiser just because, you know, he's supposed to be like either a starter, or, you know, like kind of working as a hybrid, like linebacker safety, but like a little concerning, especially for his growth as a second year player and also trying to learn a new defense. I'll put it to you, Steven. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big believer in Ashton Davis. I mean, I said on last week's show, he's kind of the guy that I'm banking on to be a surprise player. And I think he's got, you know, like you said, he's got a chance to be a Swiss Army knife in this. And I think the, you know, overall kind of weakness that we see in the secondary will benefit him a little bit, because I think we'll get a lot of looks to be, you know, a versatile player in Salah's defense. So being so young, kind of having some injury concerns last year as well, it's mildly concerning that he's not ready and that he's probably not going to be ready until week two. I think he can play and be a big factor in this defense. So him being out right now is concerning. I'm not, you know, Vinny Curry, I think, is 33 years old. I mean, he's been around the block. Him getting reps in preseason is not going to – that's not going to worry me as much. And he's definitely just a rotational piece in that defensive line, you know, a spot pass rusher. So I'm not overly concerned with that. But Ashton Davis, yeah, I mean, mildly concerning on that front. I think he's going to, you know, got a chance to be a good piece in this defense. I'd like to see him out on the field. But, you know, we'll see what shakes out. So, Tyler, what are your thoughts?
The fact that they both will miss the physically unable to perform list, I think, is the most important aspect of this thing. Like, I think their turnaround won't be nearly as long as it could be. I agree with you 100%. Vinny Curry missing time is to be expected. He was going to probably be a rotational player anyway. On that defense, he understands the defense. He understands how to play. Davis is a little more concerning, as you mentioned, mostly because he has a role on this team in the secondary and on the side too. Like, the ideal situation is he would be the heir apparent to that safety position with Marcus May if the Jets trade him or if they don't sign him after this year. So I think he needs as many reps as possible. What I do think is interesting about this defense is it's going to be a very, the secondary situation is going to be so different because like the safeties and the linebackers kind of work in tandem a little bit. And Davis kind of toes that line between safety and linebacker. So I'm less concerned about the defense as a whole without Ashton Davis in the lineup for a week or two. But yeah, from the developmental standpoint, I think Ashton Davis missing all this time, especially if it's still rehabbing injury from last year, I think that's a more concerning aspect of his long-term future with the Jets if he is poised to become a big part of this defense moving forward.
Yeah, I think that's a good point you brought up, Tyler, about his, you know, injury from last year, if it's lingering, because Ashton Davis's game is really, you know, runs through his athleticism because he's like an athletic specimen. You know, he can run, he can jump, he can do a lot of cool things. I know he made highlights last year when he was doing backflips in this like first practice with the Jets. So I think, you know, an injury that's lingering from last year is definitely concerning because it, you know, it could give him that injury prone label. And, you know, I think you guys hit it as well with Vinny Curry. I'm not too worried about him. He's definitely a rotational piece. We're not accounting on him to be an every down player. And I think he will be productive in his role, especially when he's surrounded with, you know, the defensive line talent that we currently have. Transitioning a little bit away from the injuries and more about, you know, like the ones and twos, I think, you know, it's fans were seeing how, you know, Keelan Cole was out there with Corey Davis and Jameson Crowder, which basically relegated to Denzel Mims and both Elijah Moore to the second team. I know I've been high on Denzel Mims. I know, Steven, you've also been high on Denzel Mims. Tyler, not sure how you feel about him, but do you guys think that this is a little concerning that in year two, Denzel Mims, somebody that, you know, we had a lot of high hopes for when we selected him, he can't seem to get those first team reps? I know it's the first practice, but, you know, it's definitely something to think about if he's losing out to Keelan Cole, who's really been like a third or fourth best guy on a team when he was in Jacksonville. So, Tyler, what do you think about this?
I think the situation with Mims is a little bit of two things. One, I think he missed a lot of time in OTAs with like illness and injury, which definitely played a role. So Keelan was able to kind of accelerate his development in the offense. I also think it has to do with, and this is my personal opinion, Denzel Mims is a second year player. He played, what, half the season last year learning a brand new offense. He barely played, or he didn't really see any time in the offseason practice-wise as he was recovering from various injuries. I think it's more about Keelan Cole being a veteran who understands how to play in the NFL and doesn't necessarily need the time to pick up the playbook is probably faster than it would be for Mims. So I think for Mims, it's more of a developmental play. Put Mims with the twos. There's not a lot of expectations of him to show off his skills as easily as possible. And then finally, there's also a scheme fit. I think Keelan Cole is a much better scheme fit in the Michael Fleur offense than Denzel Mims. Kyle Shanahan's styles of offense never really needed that big outside receiver as much as he did needed the inside guys, the ones that can kind of make plays inside the numbers and make plays with their feet. Mims can definitely do that, but he was kind of pegged as that big play outside threat who can make the 50-50 catches. So I think this is less about Mims being a bad player and more about Mims slowly picking up the offense a little bit more and just having Keelan Cole in there immediately.
So I think that's a very interesting point, Tyler. And so it's one that, you kind of have to, if you remain objective and take a look at it, right? And all of us, when we heard Flight 2021 we heard Mike LaFleur's press conference where he came out and he said, listen, I'm going to mold my offense to my player's best abilities, right? So typically, Tyler, you say a Shanahan offense doesn't really need that, big body wide receiver. However, when you look at Zach Wilson and when he gets in camp, but what his game was, a lot of it was predicated on those giving your receivers a chance, throwing those 50-50 balls up, which is exactly what Denzel Mims excels at. So I think getting him on the field, any chance you have to get a 6'4", 215-pound receiver that can muscle guys around, get those jump balls, you got to get him on the field. So I think it's an interesting thing to watch, definitely. I think Denzel Mims just still has a lot to prove. I mean, he missed all of training camp last year in a weird year because of COVID. He missed the first 8 weeks of the season, came in and played, with Sam Darnold and Joe Flacco. He showed flashes, but still there's a lot there left to prove. I still do think at the end of this and come week one at Carolina, if healthy, you're going to see Denzel Mims, Corey Davis, and Jameson Crowder as your starting three. I think Keelan Cole's a nice add. I think he's a good depth piece. I think he'll have a role in this offense. I still think that they're bringing Mims along slowly, and I think it's a time thing, but he's going to end up being one of the best two receivers on this team and start in week one.
Do you guys see Elijah Moore? Yeah, I was just going to say, do you think if we think Mims is going to take over for Cole, do we think Moore is going to take over for Crowder before the season starts, or is that going to be something that happens later?
So what I think, and we've talked about this, especially when he was talking about his contract and he was unhappy, depending on Crowder's looking, if a team has an injury at receiver, like a team that really is trying to go for a Super Bowl, I could see a scenario where they trade him before the deadline because he does have value and he is a productive player. And I do think that the team's long-term vision for Elijah Moore is to be an inside out guy where he could play in the slot, but he also could be on the outside for, those home run plays. So I think early on, it's probably going to be Crowder's role to lose. And if he's playing well and, there's the opportunity to trade him, they probably aren't bringing him back. So I could see Joe Douglas trying to maximize that value, maybe get a fourth round pick for him, because realistically, he's a slot receiver. He's not going to net anything higher than that. So I personally think that Elijah Moore's role will grow as the season goes on. Even if Crowder does stay on the team the rest of the year, I think he's actually going to be, probably the most explosive player we have on offense and maybe even rival Corey Davis for some touchdowns, because he really just is a home run hitter and you can really see a lot of big things. But going back to Mims, I think you guys also nailed this. I think he just needs to learn the offense. He didn't have a training camp last year. I think that definitely hurt him a little bit from a growth perspective. And I think, it's still early. The pads aren't even on. I would say if he's just not doing anything come week six, if he's just really struggling, then you could really be panicked. But I think at this point, just wait and see and be patient. We do have some depth at receiver.
Yeah. So first of all, I want to go back and correct myself, because I said Denzel Mims would probably be one of the top two. So I'll correct it to top three, because I do think in the end, it's going to be any combination of Corey Davis, Elijah Moore, and Denzel Mims. But that's really what I do believe. So Tyler, to answer your question on Elijah Moore and Jameson Crowder, I mean, I think there's never been an excitement around Elijah Moore, there's never been an excitement around a player like there is Elijah Moore, a second rounder coming into camp. However, from, the Jameson Crowder perspective, I can totally see a scenario where Elijah Moore exceeds expectations, shows that he can do that, be that slot guy, and the Jets trade Jameson Crowder to an injury riddled team or something before the deadline. My personal opinion is to keep him for the year. Maybe I'm scarred from the Sam Darnold experience. Maybe I'm scarred from the Jets having, trotting out, Chris Hogan and Jeff Smith, to start for Sam Darnold. But the more depth and talent you can have, the better, especially with a young quarterback. So I'd like to see them just keep him for the year. Especially, you know, I think Jameson Crowder is a nice player. And I think we spend so much time talking about, you know, freeing people from Adam Gase. Well, Jameson Crowder was the leading receiver in an Adam Gase offense. I think that counts for something. So I'd like to see what he can do in a Mike LaFleur offense. I'd like to see what he can do in the Shanahan system. So I do think that, you know, I do see a scenario where they could trade him around the deadline, but I really would like to see them keep him for the year. What are your thoughts, Tyler?
Braxton Berrios being the sixth wide receiver in this group instead of the second is absolutely incredible.
Right?
We're all scarred from last year.
Yeah. I mean, I love Jameson Crowder. I like the signing when they did it. Mm-hmm. I think the number one priority of the 2021 season is developing Zach Wilson. I think you do that with as many, many good players as you possibly can. Granted, if a team like the Saints come calling for Crowder for like a third or fourth round pick, Joe Douglas is going to jump at that opportunity rather than lose Crowder mm-hmm. for nothing, because he knows he has a stable of wide receivers behind him. But yeah, I think you keep as many players as you want to have Wilson to have, and then you just see where he is at the end of the year.
Definitely. Yeah.
And you're not in a jam financially, and, you know, they have the picks for next year too. So it's not necessarily a need. I mean, if you want to, you know, if the Jets are, I don't know, 1-5, 2-4, you know, you're not going anywhere. You want to, you know, recoup that sixth or that, you know, fourth or fifth rounder because, you know, you're doing right by Jameson Crowder. I can get behind that. I can understand that. But, you know, for the development of your young quarterback, keep as many talented guys as you can and learn from the past mistakes and just, you know, make sure that he has actual targets, talented targets to throw to.
Yeah, I agree. And Crowder's definitely been a really good Jet since we brought him over from Washington. Like, you know, I think part of the expectation was he wasn't supposed to be the best receiver on the team, but, you know, because Robbie Anderson left, that's what mm-hmm. happened last year. But like, he was really solid in 2019 also. I know, like, obviously he was playing in a more traditional role where he was really our third receiver, but, you know, I definitely like what I've seen from him. But at the end of the day, you know, if the trade that makes sense is available, you got to do it. But I think, you know, keeping as many good weapons around Zach for his first year and really throughout his entire career is what you need to do. And yeah, I definitely think he can be productive in this offense, but, you know, like Berrios can do a lot of the same things that he can do. And I know Elijah Moore is really versatile as well. So I think it's just like a wait and see situation, but going into the season, definitely keep him unless some team is like, here's a second round pick, like right before the season starts because a major injury happens. But yeah, I'm super excited. You know, I love the receiving room. We always talk about how there's no superstar. There's no, like, you know, Stephon Diggs, no Hopkins, Tyreek Hill, but it's just a very deep group. And I know one of my friends, like, didn't even realize that Keelan Cole was on the team. He's a Giants fan, so he didn't know. He's like, wow, the Jets actually have some depth at receiver. I'm like, it's pretty nice coming from someone who's not a Jets fan, because typically we have the Jet goggles and always think our guys are better than they actually are.
But, yeah. You know, it's one of those things, and I know we touched on it a couple of weeks ago, when you look at the D-line and you say, you know, I could see a scenario where maybe one guy gets 10-plus sacks, but then you got five or six guys that are around five or six. I could see the same thing with the receiving room where, you know, maybe there's three or four guys that get 50-plus catches. I mean, there could definitely be a scenario where there's not a true number one, but they're all getting a lot of looks and they're all getting a lot of targets and catches. And I think it's the deepest group we've had in a long time. And I'm truly excited about this wide receiver core, and I just think that they're doing – and you look at the offensive line too, they're doing the things that you should to surround Zach Wilson with talent, to set him up for success. If they could just get him in camp, that'd be great.
Let's get him here.
I think it's super from a team perspective. I think it's almost better. I mean, granted, would you love to have a Julio Jones and AJ Brown as your 1 and 2 and then figure out the rest? Yeah, absolutely. But from a schematic perspective, it's almost better to have like four or five guys that can do a lot of different things. Defenses, what are you going to do? Are you going to just double up Corey Davis and leave Elijah Moore or Jameson Crowder, Denzel Mims open? Like, no, you're going to have to cover everyone, which makes it a little bit easier on the offense, on Zach Wilson, on the running game to kind of exploit those weaknesses. So I think Joe Douglas, Robert Saleh, that whole team did a very good job of bringing in a breadth of guys to then build around and figure out what to do this year.
Yeah. And I mean, to your point, that the second group of three today was Denzel Mims, Braxton Berrios, and Elijah Moore. I feel pretty good about that. That makes me feel a lot better than I have in, I can't remember when, about the receiver.
Would you have been fine with that as the 1-2-3 last year?
I mean, I would have been excited. I would have been jumping for joy considering what we actually had.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, in all seriousness, we did. We tried. Who started last year? Chris Hogan? outside, you know, yeah. Rashad Perryman. That's what,
Rashad Perryman, please. Let's never say that name again.
On opening day. I mean, that's the reality of it. Yeah. So that is my case for keeping Jameson Crowder. I would like to see him here for the whole year, simply from the depth piece and just the, you know, the talent standpoint and keeping talented people that can catch the ball around Sam Darnold. So yep. I'm sorry, around Sam Darnold, around Zach Wilson. Look at that.
It's okay.
So Steven, if you don't mind, we'll talk about just another, you know, the depth piece here. So the other two things I think that were notable from today's practice were Michael Carter starting with the ones, and then Tyler Croft as well over Chris Herndon in the tight end group. So what do you guys think about that?
Well, Tyler, I feel like you got to talk about Tyler Croft. You got to root for him. He's got the same name as you, right?
We got Tyler Croft. We got Ty Johnson. All the ties on the Jets. Tyler Croft, I think Chris Herndon is entering a very interesting season for himself. I think he's teetering on draft bust, which I guess at this point is to be expected with Mike Maccagnan players outside of Quinn Williams. So I think, again, Tyler Croft is a very good blocking tight end who has proven in the past to be an adept pass catcher as well. So I think right now he fits the team better. He's performing better in the offense. I think Chris Herndon is in a similar boat to Denzel Mims. It's taking him longer to pick up the playbook, which only hurts his future with the team. I think it will be much easier for Joe Douglas to move on from Chris Herndon if he underperforms this year. And if he performs adequately, I think it'll be hard for Maccagnan to keep him. So Tyler Croft, again, might be one of those guys that he starts all throughout camp, and then somewhere along the way, Chris Herndon proves that a light bulb flicks on and he's the week one starter. So I wouldn't be surprised if Tyler Croft started week one, but I am still expecting Herndon because of that potential, that skill level to eventually take over as that starting tight end.
Yeah, I feel similarly. I mean, I think Croft really fits the, you know, the Michael Thor scheme because it's very run heavy. So I think I understand, you know, the logic behind when they signed him. And I think, you know, Herndon hopefully will get some red zone looks. But kind of going back to what you're talking about, Michael Carter, you know, I was reading a lot today about how the left side looked really good. There's a lot of holes being opened up. So I'm getting super excited to see that, you know, Becton, AVT combination. I'm just hoping that the offense completely runs to the left side every single play, because you know, if ABT is as advertised, which it seems like he's probably going to be, and Becton just stays on the field because we know the talent is there. The man is just a mammoth of a human. He stopped Aaron Donald. I mean, if you could stop Aaron Donald, there's no ceiling of what he could be. And I know Steven's really betting that this man is going to make the Pro Bowl this year, maybe even all pro. It's going to be tough, but like, I'm super excited to see what Michael Carter can do. It's really encouraging that he was able to run with the first team. I know he did switch off with Coleman, but I think it's good to have a 1-2 punch. In the NFL, it's a passing league. So if you have two solid backs, rather than just having a workhorse, I think it could be really, really strong for the offense. And I think it also can open up the playbook a little bit because, you know, maybe one of them is getting more designated for passing downs and the other will be more for like the rushing downs. But yeah, I'm super excited for about both these guys. And I'm interested to see how the tight end room shakes out, because I think Daniel Brown will be cut. I think Ryan Griffin might actually resurge a little bit. He was actually really good the first year of Gase. I know that's like not saying much, but he did catch a bunch of touchdowns and made a few nice plays. Last year was kind of just a lost season for him. So I'm interested to see how he shakes out with this team. Steven, what do you think about these two guys?
Yeah. I mean, I think it bodes well for Michael Carter that he opened up, you know, in the number one spot at running back. I do. I think the trust is obviously there with Tevin Coleman. So for him to come out and be the number one guy, I think that that's impressive. And that's something that we all expect, but I wasn't necessarily expecting it this quickly. To kind of touch on Steven, your point about, you know, the left side, I love it. I love that they're, you know, first day of camp and they're running that way. I couldn't stand last year seeing Becton pointing at the sideline, angry as hell, because he was telling Gase to keep running his way and he just wouldn't listen, and then hand the ball to Frank Gore for a run up the middle on, you know, second and 12. And then from the, you know, the Herndon piece and Tyler Croft, I mean, I think Herndon, yeah, he still has a lot to prove. I think, you know, we've had other people on the show that have had differing opinions. You know, we had Will Parkinson on, who was really, you know, he brought up a good point in that, you know, look at him through the same goggles that we looked at Sam Darnold through. And in reality, it's very similar. You're kind of banking on that last four game stretch of his rookie season to be the truth. And then, you know, I think he had a clear case of the lip of the yips last year, but came on, you know, semi-strong at the end of that year, but we're trying to see who the real Chris Herndon is. Then, on the other side, you had Dalvin, who, you know, planted his stake firmly in the Herndon hive last week. So I'm anxious to see what it really shakes out with, because I do think it's a run heavy scheme. So having a good blocking tight end, that bodes well for Tyler Kroft, but Chris Herndon's not a bad blocker either. And I think you kind of see what this system can do with a good receiving tight end. I'm not saying that Herndon's George Kittle, but you know, Herndon has, I think, good potential there as a pass catcher. So I'd say mildly concerning that Herndon's still with the twos. I think he's got a lot of, a lot to prove, but I'd like to see him eke his way into the starting lineup, because I'm still a believer there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just hoping that everybody that's on this team that wasn't from, this year's draft class that we were kind of down on really just shows out, because it's that Gase freedom watch, as I love to talk about. And I just think it's a breath of fresh air. I know I was seeing Jared Davis was speaking to the media today, and he was just saying there was times when he was in Cleveland where he wanted to quit football, similar to what Fitzpatrick said about his 2016 season with the Jets. And he says he's kind of feeling like rejuvenated and revitalized. And I think you're really going to see that effect on all the guys who are returning from the 2020 team, just because it was hard for them. They were losing. They lost, 12 straight games to start the season, which is miserable. And it's just like, how could you get to that point? And on top of it just being a tough year because of COVID and all the restrictions and everything in life, I think that there's going to be some juice, and I'm hoping that our rookie quarterback is there to provide the spark, because I'm hoping, he comes tomorrow or he comes Friday, and it's similar to Darnold, like they're giving him like a standing ovation and clapping, and then he just takes the bull by the horns and gets ready to go. Because at the end of the day, he's the most important man to walk into that building every single day going forward. So we need him there. And I'm just hoping that, Joe Douglas, Woody Johnson can get this done, because the longer this shakes out, it's just going to become a distraction. It's just not something the team needs right now, especially with all the positive momentum we had. And, we want to get to the season clean free. And this just isn't fair for Robert Saleh in his first year, where this is the guy he's supposed to be, going to battle with, and he doesn't have him. And it's just, he doesn't want to keep answering questions about it every day. And I feel bad for him, because it's just not ideal.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny watching Robert Saleh press conferences, and I think he's still trying to figure out how to deal with those classic media questions where people ask him something that he clearly does not know any more information about. And he just has to say like effectively no comment, but it just makes him sound like he doesn't know what's going on. And it's truly mostly because another thing, the power structure is so different now. Yep. Like, he doesn't make the decisions anymore. He doesn't work with Douglas. Like, it's Saleh, Douglas, Woody. It's not Saleh and Douglas anymore. So I think it's interesting seeing Robert Saleh have to contend with the media in that regard. And yeah, I mean, he'll give the information when he has it. And I think that, unfortunately, people just kind of have to wait.
Yeah. We actually got... we got an interesting question from one of the viewers, Greg Waters, just asking about the contract issue. He said, is it a Joe Douglas thing or an ownership thing? So just to answer that question, Greg, everything I've read, and I'm pretty sure that Tyler and Steve have read the same thing, it's definitely coming from the top. It's not Joe Douglas. It's just because they don't want to set a precedent that they're not going to do offset language for anybody in the future. And it just seems like it's kind of Joe Douglas's hands are tied. Steven, didn't mean to cut you off. I just thought it was a good question to answer.
No, that was totally fine. I think, overall, as we look to this year, I think the biggest thing, kind of my overarching thoughts just on how this year will play out, I don't expect them to be a playoff team. Could I see a scenario where they get to that point? Yes, I do. However, I think most of our overall expectations are just for them to compete. But I think the biggest thing in learning from years past is the biggest want that I have out of this season is to simply have answers on what we can rely on for 2022, which is something the Jets simply haven't had in a long time. I mean, everything as we finished up seasons past, as you look at it, they've just had rolls of the dice that have gone to the next season where it's like, okay, well, if we can bank on this guy being good, which is still a question mark, then maybe we're okay. But let's get answers out of important, positions and know that we can be reliable in certain areas that are building blocks for the future. That's the biggest thing that I want. And then, just every little tidbit, that we hear about the Zach Wilson thing just puts doubt in minds. And that's just not what I want. So I want to know that we can have a reliable corner in Bryce Hall. I want to know that we can have a reliable young receiving core. I want to know that we can have building blocks. And those are things that, okay, you can check the box on and then say, okay, now I got to go out and get this to, fulfill a need next offseason, and not just have complete question marks at you know, across the board on the roster for 2022. This should be the building block season. So I hope we can have some of those boxes checked and questions answered.
Definitely.
I think those are all, in terms of expectations, realistic goals. Like, don't look at the win column, just look at like point differential. I think if they can avoid being the highest point differential in the league, then it's a successful season. If they go, what is it, 16 games now, I guess, or 17 games now, 17, right?
17, yeah.
Yep. So if they win less than half those games, I think if they're within a score or two, or not even two, within 10 points, I think it's successful. And if you come out of the season, like you're saying, if you know that Zach Wilson is at least developing and he's not making the same mistakes he did in college, he's not turning the ball over a lot, I think those are positive outlooks. Like, no playoff mandate, that would just be putting too much pressure on this team, too much pressure on Salah. So I think looking at the season as the building block year is the correct take. And I think that's the take that most of people in Jets facility probably expect. The players obviously want to win the Super Bowl, but I think as fans should also be looking at it that way as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I like the point differential take, Tyler. I think that's a good thing to look at, because last year I think we had the worst one by far. It was like historically bad. I remember reading into it. I'm like, this is like burning my eyes. But Steven, going back to Bryce Hall, just wanted to congratulate him on the birth of his first child. And also for George Fant, I know he was placed on the reserve COVID list. Just obviously wish he's well. I know he has to quarantine for 10 days because I don't think he's vaccinated, but obviously hope he's okay. Want to get him back soon because he is a really nice depth piece for the offensive line, even though he is battling with Morgan Moses for the right tackle job. So Tyler, obviously, as I mentioned at the top of the show, I know you obviously have been covering the team for a bit for the Jets Wire. For anyone who hasn't followed Tyler on Twitter, it's TyGreen14. And he has a nice piece about Elijah Moore. It's a feature they wrote a few weeks back. And he mentioned that he's also working on a piece about Michael Carter that should be coming out before the first preseason game. Any thoughts on that, Tyler, of why our viewers should read this stuff?
I think one of the best parts so far about talking to Elijah and Michael Carter and just the people around both of them is that it seems like Joe Douglas has drafted fantastic people. Like, they were probably the nicest people I've ever spoken to. They gave a ton of time that they didn't need to talk with me. I think the thing that they both said, and these are two different stories about two different people, but they both said the same thing, is that what matters most to them is who they are as people, and that'll translate to how they play on the field. So if you're a good person first, then you'll be a good player. Great. It all sounds fantastic, but it was really refreshing to hear, especially from two really young guys who are poised to play big roles on this team in the future. Real quick on Michael Carter, because then talk about sort of my thoughts on him in the offense real quick. I think he played he and Javonte Williams and UNC back-to-back 50-50 split. I think that'll be the same, and I think he kind of thrives in that sense. I don't think he necessarily needs to be that three-down back. And he talked about it with me, how that being in that situation and not necessarily needing to tote the load every single time kind of helped him sort of understand the game a little more and kind of help working with someone. So I think it was really cool to see, and I think it'll translate well into his role in the Jets. In the future, who knows if he'll be – a three down back for us if we'll continue to do the committee, but it'll be cool to see this year how he works in with either Coleman or Ty Johnson or Michael Perrine or whoever else we bring in.
Great stuff. And don't forget to check out those pieces on Jets Wire. It's part of the USA Today's coverage of the Jets. Any closing thoughts, Steven?
No, I mean, I think, you know, like I said in our opening comments about Zach Wilson, it's an exciting time as a Jets fan. Just don't take the wind out of our sails here. Get it done. Get Zach in camp. It's an important, it's very important for a young QB with a young team and a new offense, new coaching staff, all that. I don't need to rehash it all. Just don't take the wind out of our sails. Keep the confidence, keep the momentum going here. Get him in camp, make it happen.
Totally agree. Don't want to, you know, keep saying it again, but like I mentioned every week, don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel at Turn on the Jets on YouTube. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast feed, Turn on the Jets podcast, on Apple, Spotify, or Google Play. And as always, if you're not a member of the Badlands Patreon, make sure you check that out as well. I know some great content is definitely coming soon, especially the docuseries about Zach Wilson. Hopefully he'll be signed by the time it comes out. And Connor actually had a great first video that he posted yesterday just talking about the contract. So if you're interested to find out more details, Connor breaks it down really well there. And I'll also check out the merchandise on Badlands. It's great stuff. I love my tank top. I know everyone that has it loves it.